Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. As the month of May closes out, all the pomp and circumstance of high school graduation has finally gone quiet. So how did we do? What were our graduation rates like? How about our dropout rates? How does the Alaska experience compare to national averages? How does Anchorage compare to Kenai and Matsu, as well as other parts of the state? We'll learn at least some of that today on today's Hometown Alaska with key guests from our local and surrounding school districts, Anchorage, Kenai, and Matsu. I'll introduce our guests in a moment, but to our listeners, I invite these questions. If you got your high school education in Alaska, what was your experience like? Were you ready for college or the work world? If you're a parent of a high school graduate, were you satisfied with your child's learning? Were they ready for what came next? And if you teach high school, what's your perspective? Graduation and dropout rates mean lots of numbers, and I've attached web links at alaskapublic.org. So if you hear something on the show that intrigues you, or you want to check out the state's report card on education yourself, you'll find out how on our website. Just open the Hometown Alaska story on the alaskapublic.org homepage. So let's turn to our guests. Welcome to Dina Paramo, superintendent for the Matsu Borough School District. Dina, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yes, and thanks for, it was not a long drive. We talked about that. It was not a long drive, but she came all the way down here just for our show, so thank you very much. And we also have in the studio with me Mike Henry, the executive director for executive director?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Secondary education for the Anchorage School District. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased to be here today.
Really happy to have you. And then we hope that we will hear from Steve Atwater, who is the superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, who's in a meeting and going to jump out and at least give us maybe 15 minutes during the show to talk about what our topic is today, graduation rates, dropout rates. What do those numbers mean? What are the trend lines? Where do we see success? You know, if we see things changing, what do we think we're doing to make that happen? I want to throw out our phone numbers to our audience. Please feel free to give us a call. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. If you're outside of town, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So welcome, everybody. Our goal really for the show is to explain graduation rates, explain what they mean, explain if they're different from a dropout rate, kind of tell our audience what the trend lines are. So I did a little research getting ready. I don't have a whole lot of education policy background, but I spent some time with Diane Hirschberg, who is an education policy professor, and she talked to me a little bit about it. I also did a lot of reading. And one of the things I saw is that we have a goal for 90% graduation by 2020. You see that nationally. I saw it at the Anchorage School District. I saw another story today that was from April of 2014 that said nationally we've got 80% graduation rates, and there's a good chance we're going to get to 90% by 2020. And as you'll see on our website, we've got our rates here locally. And I'm going to invite our guests from each of these districts just to speak about their rates. But let's talk a little bit about what a graduation rate is and what the trends are in our state. Would that be an okay question to start with you guys? Okay, she's pointing to Mike. You're on, Mike.
You know, our graduation rates for the Anchorage School District are certainly not where they want to be, but our trend on graduation rate is moving up. Our trend on dropout rates is moving down. The Anchorage School District, we've not calculated this year's graduation rate for the class of 2014. Those won't come out for sometime later, probably in November. But for 2013, we were at 76.2% graduation rate. That's the students that started as ninth graders 4 years ago. And that's up from a 63% in 2007. So even though we're not pleased with those, we're very, very pleased and celebrate the small victories in moving the needle in the right direction.
I saw that there is the 2020 goal. It starts from 2007. You see 63, and it's kind of inching up. And then, in addition, they change the way you calculate the graduation rate, so that changes things. But you can look at the numbers, and they're going up. And they're in the, I think for all three school districts we're talking about today, they're in the 70s, high 70s, mid 70s. So it's not as if we're district-wide down in the 50s or anything like that. Now, if you go to individual populations, you will see some serious dips, and we'll talk about that as we go on. I'm actually see that Steve is on the line, and we will try to get him on here and invite him. Dina, let me let you introduce your district just a little bit, the size, the characteristics, and maybe how are you doing with graduation rates?
Sure. Well, in 2012-2013, the five-year graduation rate was 76%, which was up from 2006 at 56%. And so it was a 20 percentage point gain, which is an upward trend, but certainly when you have students who don't graduate, it's not good enough. I mean, you know, you had mentioned, is the expectation 100? I mean, sure, we would love for everyone in our country to have an education. I mean, that's, you know, public education is for all of us. MATSU is north of Anchorage, of course, and we have 45 different schools, and they range from really a one-room schoolhouse in a Russian mission called Beryosova to our largest single school is MATSU Central School with over 1,500 students on homeschool. Our high schools range about 1,000 to 1,400 kids, and we have several different communities, Palmer, Wasilla, Houston. We have specialized schools such as the Career Technical High School. We have Mankatanch, which is a STEM school. So we have special mission schools as well as charter schools. One of the big things about MATSU is that we do offer parents choice. We try to bus kids and really try to match the type of education that parents are seeking for their students.
So try to offer variety. And really, we're probably, I want to welcome Steve on. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. This is Steve Atwater, the superintendent from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. We really appreciate you jumping out of your meeting and giving us a little bit of time. So, you know, we're talking graduation rates, dropout rates. We've just begun, and I was inviting Dina and Mike from Dina from Kenai, excuse me, MATSU, and Mike from Anchorage to just characterize their experience, their graduation rates, and a little bit about their school district. You are probably the smallest school district of these three, right?
Oh, that's correct by far, yeah.
And what do you have offhand? Do you know what your graduation rate is and your dropout rate?
Yeah, just real briefly, we're a sprawling school district with about 8,800 kids, 43 schools. But none of our schools are large. Our largest school is just around 500 kids. And then we have lots of little schools. And so we have pretty much everything but big schools. Our graduation rate last year was 78.5%. And five-year, it was 81%. And so that's been inching up over the years. Obviously, like the other, like Dina and Mike mentioned, not where we want it to be, but certainly we're headed in the right direction. We feel we're taking some good corrective steps, too, to long-term see that come up as the kids come up through the system.
And you would have some very rural schools, village schools even, right?
Yeah, we have three Alaska Native village schools, Tionic, Nanwalek, and Port Graham. And we also have Old Believer schools. We have four Old Believer schools, which are unique challenges in themselves. The kids are bilingual. They speak Russian at home and come to school not fluent in English. So that in itself is a big challenge, too.
Yeah. So, Mike, the size of your district probably gives you some advantages in terms of problem solving, but then you have these really unique schools that are way, way far away and way different. How do you feel about your graduation rate, and is it something you feel parents are watching, and is it important to them, or how do you look at that number? What does that number mean to you? I know you want it to go up, but, you know, is a decimal point significant to you?
You know, it certainly is significant, but we're not going to be happy until we have no dropouts and each one of our high school students are graduating. The Anchorage School District is made up of about 47,000 students. We're a quite large district.
Urban. You're the most urban.
Yeah. Yes, we are. We just found out not too long ago through some research that was done by, the university, that East High School is the most diverse high school in the entire nation. And their first, second is West High School, and third is Bartlett High School. So our population is very diverse, and we certainly celebrate that. But it, like Steve said, it brings with it some challenges, having such a diverse population, and kids and families from all over the world.
Yeah, and I mean, we have military kids. There's just a whole lot. Steve, I'm really mindful of the fact that you jumped out of a meeting, and so I just want to make sure I, you know, give you an opportunity to contribute how you want to contribute to the program before we lose you.
You bet. I'm on till 2:30, if that makes sense.
Oh, you're available till 2:30?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Then we can keep a kind of a round-robin dialogue going on here. And I can see we're getting calls from Juno, too. So, all right. Let's, I feel like you don't wake up in the morning and think, let's talk graduation rates. But actually, Dina said, when you're an educator, you do. You know, these numbers, you likened it to stepping on a scale and getting one number. And Dina, talk to us about
that. Well, certainly, they're a number that is given to us, I mean, that we've earned, if you will. And it's a way to mark progress or their lack of. But it isn't everything. It doesn't define everything we do for students in schools. And I did liken it to, I get up every morning and I weigh myself. And certainly that's a part of me. It's something that I look at, but it doesn't define me as a whole person. Mm-hmm. And that's how we look at these. These are numbers. For instance, we realize that part of our graduation rate is really tied to policy and discipline. When we have a zero tolerance policy for drugs and alcohol, you're removing students completely. It's very hard for a student who's removed and misses time in school to get back and get caught up. So by our own policies that we had with such things,
rate.
We've affected it. So we've be getting different programs where students who are long-term suspended or expelled, or not expelled, but try to keep them in school, can go to an alternative placement and be educated. Of course, under contracts, we're working with the Division of Juvenile Justice for this.
But to keep their progress forward.
Absolutely.
Moving. Yeah.
So they're going to continue to have the consequence for the behavior, yet they're not going to get so far behind in school that it's nearly very difficult to catch up, if you will. Because
right.
As Mike said, the graduation rate is the clock starts ticking when they're a freshman and they have 4 years. And
right.
So if we lose time for suspensions or long-term suspensions, expulsions, that really is our own policy working against us and how we're judged through graduation rate. So
right.
it's figuring out within our own systems and our own policies what's best for kids and how we can work with that.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve. Steve, why don't you tell us what those numbers mean to you, and if you've seen them change in your tenure, what do you think that's been about?
Yeah, I'd like to think that we're improving because graduation is not about high school. It's about K through 12, and I think that we offer a more comprehensive program with a much more in-depth response to intervention for our younger students when they first come to us. I think that we're doing far more sophisticated in how we deal with children that aren't acquiring literacy at a young age. And I think what we're doing that is beginning to show, we've been doing it for about 15 years now, show fruition in terms of kids making it through the system. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that it's important when you talk about graduation rate that you don't point the finger at high schools. It's an ongoing K-12 issue. And I think what we're doing also is to look at ninth graders. We view that as a pivotal grade in terms of whether or not they're going to graduate. And we're beginning to do more and more ninth grade houses. We're actually going to open up a Soldotna Prep, which will be just for ninth graders only, as a way to really give the ninth graders a good, solid foundation for high school. Our goal, of course, is for every ninth grader to have 6 credits when they graduate or when they finish that year. And so those are some of the things we're doing. We also have what's called advisories inside of our high school, where every teacher has a group of students that they work with throughout their high school career. It's sort of like a homeroom that you have with elementary school, where the high school teacher is taking some time and touching base with the student, taking a close look at grades, just that quality control so that the kids don't slip through the cracks. And,
mm-hmm.
and we do, because of our smaller numbers,
you can
we
do
don't
that.
Have the large high schools that they have an anchorage
yeah.
in that too. We have a more personal touch that way. So those are some of the things we're doing. But certainly, like Dina said, it doesn't define us. And it's also important to note that kids come and go in our system as they do in Anchorage and Mat-Su all the time.
So mobility was one of the things we talked about early on, that's a huge effect.
So, you know, a kid will show up on our doorstep as a junior with 6 credits. And, you know, that becomes part of our system. And we embrace that, and we do everything we can to help that child. But it's not fully reflective of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District to say, that those students that didn't graduate were part of us, because for some of them, they've only been with us for a short time. And that also goes with the dropout rate that we'll talk about later, probably.
Yeah. If you just joined us, we're talking graduation rates, we're talking dropout rates. We have the superintendent of the Mat-Su School District with us, Dina Paramo. We have Mike Henry here from the Anchorage School District, the executive director of secondary education. And we have Steve Atwater on the phone calling in from Kenai. I do want to take a quick break. We did get a call from John. I'd like to welcome you to Hometown Alaska, because you've called in, and I'd like to give you an opportunity. What is your question, John?
Oh, hi there. Thanks for having me on. I didn't have a question so much as in your introduction, you were asking for input from people that had graduated high school here in Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I will be 60 years old this year, so we're talking ancient history, four decades ago.
Uh-huh.
I was scheduled to graduate in 1971, and I went to school here. I was born and raised here in Anchorage, and I went to school not all the way through the ninth grade. When I was in the ninth grade at Central Junior High, my parents moved, and I transferred to Juno Douglas High School, because ninth grade was a high school level there at that time. And what I found was I was one full year ahead of the kids in Juno. I went straight into sophomore classes.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I was able to graduate a year early in 1971. And you asked the question, was I ready for college? Yes, I started college the next year at AMU, the predecessor to APU.
Mm-hmm. So you'd give a pretty high score for your experience.
I do, but I'm not so sure that's true today. I spoke not long ago, by that I mean a few years ago, when you get to my age, time flies.
Uh-huh.
I spoke with a teacher that was new to Alaska. He was teaching AP classes, advanced placement classes. He had previously taught in both New York and Connecticut, and when he came to Alaska, he said that the AP classes here were essentially the same level as all the normal classes were back east.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me wonder if Anchorage still has the advantage that it once had when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we do have a much more diverse population, and the challenges are probably quite a bit greater than they were when Anchorage was a smaller community.
Mm-hmm. All right,
but,
yeah.
I'm not so sure that... I have kind of a pet peeve in schooling in general, from the perspective that I think that more resources ought to be put into the top 1 or 2% of the kids, because school for me was actually quite boring, especially when I got to Juno. It was insanely boring because it didn't move at a pace that was quick enough to keep me interested.
All right. Well, so, John, let me just open this up to our two guests here and you too, Steve. Any input on that? I mean, John is admitting that times change, circumstances change, diversity changes. Do you have some response to what he's telling you, other than that things are different? I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, he's got a perspective.
Certainly things are different. Our advanced placement teachers now all have to be certified and especially trained, and that's happened in the past 3 or 4 years. I'm not sure when the caller talked to this AP teacher, but our move for more rigor with all of our students in the Anchorage School District continues to be a very important goal for us. As a matter of fact, right now we have over 300 students, teachers at Bartlett High School. A main part of their training is advanced placement training with folks from all over the nation who are doing the training.
So you feel like that actually the certification of these teachers was an important advancement for AP?
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, I think, John, it's kind of dangerous to, you know, You're trying to grasp and see, are things different, and it's really hard looking back in the rearview mirror. It's really hard.
Yeah, I would say though, he has a point in the fact, and we always are trying to be cognizant of this, that we get kids and Steve Atwater alluded to this, that are behind in the literacy, that they're really years behind when they even come to us. You know, some come to us as 5-year-olds ready to learn, some really at the age of 3 as their vocabulary, things like that. So there's things in schools called catch-up growth. And we try to catch kids up because we have this line in the sand that we have to get kids over. And it used to be the HSGQE. That's gone now. But we also need to know that every child who comes to us, whether it's catch-up growth or they're the highest quartile kid, they still need to learn a year for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we looked at that years ago in Mat-Su and said, whoa, we need to ensure. And so we really look at growth of learning. So I could be 3 years ahead say, as a sixth grader, I'm doing eighth grade math, but if I don't move 3 years ahead during my time in middle school, we've lost some, you know,
ground.
We're regressing to the mean. So we really focus on that everybody has to learn at least a year for a year of being in school with us.
Uh-huh.
And then the kids who are behind do catch up. So there's a point to that. But the idea that more, I would challenge that more kids of diversity are in AP courses. And advanced placement is run by the College Board. And the idea that it used to only be for some students. And they take an outside assessment, and if they score 3, 4, 5 on this assessment, they can get college credit. The theory now is, and not just in our school districts, but across the nation, that even having access, say you're not, you may not pass that AP course, but having access to that high-level rigor, mm-hmm. As Mike mentioned, is going to have you more prepared for college. And so many times, kids may not... you know, you might hear, well, they would never have gotten into AP 30 years ago. That may have been the case. But this, now we say, you know what? Having access to the rigor will better prepare them, whether they pass that AP test, mm-hmm. That College Board test or not.
The journey, not the destination.
They're getting that high-level coursework, and they're getting exposure to, as he said, the efficacy of teachers teaching at that rigor.
Uh-huh.
That is what we do in school is, I think that is the biggest piece of equity we could give is an outstanding teacher to a child, whether they're from whatever demographic, poverty level, anything. And
right.
So I would continue to kids that are motivated, that have the work ethic, go into those courses, and we will bring them along. And they may not pass that final test, but certainly they should have access to that learning.
It's a bigger audience for that class. It may not be that narrower audience that maybe John was experiencing. You know, not everybody could even take those classes.
It has changed.
Uh-huh.
The audience and the kids that are in those courses has changed. But they're finding that it benefits college preparedness.
Uh-huh. So, well, very interesting. John, thank you so much for your perspective. I really appreciated it. There are others out in the audience that have that same question or wonder about that themselves, trying to weigh their own experience. So thank you so much for calling in.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, you know, I'm just concerned that the kids that are the smartest aren't bored in school. I really hope that their curricula is challenging enough to keep them interested. I think there's a lot of kids that could knock out 2 school years a year.
Yeah.
The opportunity.
Yeah. All right.
It makes it terrible for a kid to just be bored to death. You know, when they would give you a math, they'd introduce a new math contest and then tell you to do 100 problems. For me, that was like writing my name 100 times because I got it the first time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, John. I'm going to invite our guests to see if they've got anything to say to this.
Well, actually, in our conversations before the show, we really did discuss courses that were going on here at APU, at UAA. More and more, we opened up a middle college for sophomores going into their junior year. I know on Kenai they offer dual credit, tech credit as well, that students can earn college credit while in high school. And so we are really trying to hit those areas where they are for the kids who are at that level. And it is true. They need to learn a year for a year if they're spending with us. We can't let them regress. But there are programs that address it. And I know that there's college programs right here in Anchorage. I know many students
who attend. To make those opportunities to keep growing. So if you're already ahead, you don't slip back because you're waiting for the rest of your class to catch up.
Each of our school districts has memorandums of agreement with UAA system, Kenai Borough Peninsula system, as well as
for opportunities for students to step in and maybe take a college class and get high school credit for it.
Correct. And college credit.
And college credit. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, anything from you about John's worry about, well, you addressed the AP teachers, the certification of them.
John's concern is very valid. There's nothing worse that we can do in public education than to bore a brilliant student. So we have done what it is that we can do. Working with college universities, but also several years ago, the Anchorage School District launched online courses. And one of the main reasons for doing online courses was so students could take part in the advanced placement courses during their junior and senior year and not have to forego the elective courses that they wanted. Currently, there's about 1,400 students, Anchorage School District students, that are taking courses online. They are very challenging, and students that have busy schedule with activities, community service, can still take the classes that they want, especially if it's just one or two courses. into
it. Are they finishing?
Absolutely. Our success rate, our school board has supported this 100%, and our success rate with our online courses is close to 92%, which is unheard of.
Interesting, because you hear about all the MOOCs and everything that you can take and thousands of people signing up and then sort of drifting away, falling away. And there's a lot of concern about online courses. Are they as good as a teacher standing in front of you? Is it the same? And yet, I feel like culturally we're moving in a direction where I get what I want when I want it. You know, you can watch TV when you want. You know, you can watch your favorite show when you want to watch it, not when it's scheduled. Well, it feels almost that that's drifted into education. Like, if I want to take Spanish in addition to the Russian I'm taking in school, I can take it at 8 o'clock at night if I want, or whatever the classes are. That it's kind of on-demand education in a way.
It is indeed, and for me to say that online education is the same as taking a live class with an outstanding teacher, that would not be true at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an outstanding alternative for many of our mm-hmm. students who want. Who want something different, that want something extra, or just want to work on it at 10 o'clock at night or on Saturday and Sunday. They have free access to it 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and with online, they're really blended courses. They are hooked up with a certified teacher. And I had, in our district, we wanted to offer some more English classes in the summer. The students in our district that are choosing online learning are really doing it to accelerate. We brought it on board years ago to do credit recovery to try to catch kids up.
I've read about credit recovery.
However, it's taken off. I'd say 90% of the students who enroll, which we have about 1,700, which is pretty big for the size. So we have a certified teacher. Then there's really somebody running the labs. All the assessments are proctored in school. We run a program called APEX. I know they have a different one in Kenai. So we all have our own vendors. And they're really top-notch curricula that, you know, whether it's videos and documents, you're looking at original documents. But I talked to a teacher who, a good teacher, we had asked her, can you be an online teacher and connect with these kids during the summer and bring them along? And she actually teaches AP too, and she was like, I don't know, I'm not used to it. I like to have my kids in my class. And
I like to see
she
them
was in her
60s,
right? So she had a different way. But she said, after that year, she was amazed because of exactly what you said. The kids that she had online had questioned. They're so used to social media that they opened up to her more about questions about their writing, received better feedback online on their writing. It is a different mode of, I guess, delivery and acceptance of kids. And she was amazed that probably was able to get better writing out of these kids online who she communicated with. At least the kids who took the class, because that was their gig. I mean, they got that.
Yeah.
And was amazed, so she never passed judgment on it again. You know.
Interesting.
But we need to, you're right, like the online courses should be NCAA approved. There are, just like any learning that could go on, there is mm-hmm. a level of excellence that you want. And so you need to provide quality blended or online learning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know we're going to leave Steve. Steve, I'm sorry. We got off here a little bit. Anything you want to add to this discussion before you have to disappear, especially related to, you know, keeping really interested students going? That's probably not where you worry the most. You probably worry about the ones that are dropping out at the other end.
Yeah, you always worry about where the water is coming through the cracks in the boat, and that's usually the kids that are struggling the most, and they tend to give those the immediate attention as they deserve, at least so. But it is a challenge. The caller had a good point. It is a challenge to meet the needs of all of your learners, and the high-end learners do occasionally present a challenge. With regard to distance learning, we have 6 dedicated teachers. That's all they do is do distance all day, and we have kids all over our district taking classes all the time. Now, that's a fluid learning environment that is more and more going to be the norm for our kids. And in fact, if any kind of adult learning requires sort of an online type of learning environment. And so I think that to prepare our kids for what's next, it's important that we do include that. So we're excited about what we do, but I think it's not a matter of a student passively sitting in front of a computer without any interaction. Not only do you create a social environment online among the students who are taking that class, but you also have a teacher who's able to come together with the kids to offer enrichment and follow-up type activities. So we're excited about what we're doing,
yeah,
and definitely see that as a way to help keep kids contained. And what's going to be challenging to our system is that we're going to begin to break down some of the walls with regard to attendance, with regard to does a student really need to be there every day from, you know, 7:30 until 3:30, or is it possible to count as a full-time student and only be there for half of that time? Mm-hmm. These are some of the challenges that are come at us, and very interesting as we look forward to funding education and how is it that we really deal with the students. They're certainly engaged, they're doing a full-time course load, but they may not be physically present, although they're requiring resources from the school district. So
yeah,
that's an interesting conversation that's going to come at us, and one that really people haven't grappled with, particularly as we look to go beyond our borders and offer courses through the governor's digital initiative outside of our school district. How does that work?
And so people could be taking Kenai class, Mat-Su students could be taking Kenai classes, or Anchorage
or
students could
versa,
be taking
yeah.
Bering Strait
exactly.
School District class. I know we're going to lose you, Steve. I just was going to say, what's your biggest concern, forefront in your mind about graduation rates?
The biggest concern, I think, is that we have a system that's limited in terms of how the students attain their credits. And we often find students in a sort of an impossible predicament where they're in a sort of a catch-up piece. I think if we can begin to break down some of the walls for how you issue credits and move away from seat time, which has been primarily the driver of how we do business, and this is more and more happening, and just look into a performance-based system where kids are performing, and then once they perform, then they earn the credit.
Makes sense.
It's actually very logical.
It's kind of, you know, what
yeah.
can you do? What do you know how to do versus how long
right.
did you sit in that chair? Yeah. So
I think the system is not designed to help kids who don't neatly fit into it, and so that's our challenge, is to help the kids who don't neatly fit into our system, which is happening more and more. Kids are coming from broken homes, or kids are bouncing around between parents, that kind of thing. To help accommodate those students who are on the fringe a little bit, because mm-hmm. those are the ones who typically don't graduate. Kids who come from sound homes with two parents pretty much graduate. That's not the issue. It's the kids that have sort of the extraneous situations.
Yeah, Dina was saying before, you know, whatever's going on in your community, you're seeing it in your schools. So if you're having issues in your community, you're having issues in your school. It's not an isolated environment that somehow virtuous and wonderful for people who end up there. It's got the same problems as the whole community is. So, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time out of your meeting. I'm going to let you go back to your whatever. I hope it's a fun meeting, but I don't know.
Yeah, we've got 150 teachers here. We're working, getting ready for next year, so it's pretty exciting. So,
all right.
Well, good to have me on. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. And we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we've got some email coming in. Folks want to weigh in on their high school experience. So we'll be right back. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we're talking about graduation rates, where does Alaska stack up with the nation, what are the trend lines here, what do they mean, is a graduation rate the opposite side of a dropout rate, what does that mean? We've got some terrific guests in the studio today. We have Dina Paramo from the Mat-Su School District. She's a superintendent up there. We have Mike Henry in the studio with us. He is the executive director of secondary education for the Anchorage School District, and we just said goodbye to Steve Atwater, who is the superintendent from the Kenai School District. And we invited them all in, not to really to compete, but to tap into their real understanding about, you know, the accountability that they have, the numbers that they carry, the numbers that they work on. But how does that translate into caring for students, seeing success for students. And I'm going to read one email. We got an email from an audience member, and I'll invite our guests here to just give us any feedback. This person was just saying that they were in a gifted program early on in the Anchorage School District, but they felt like they got out of the school district without some of that nuts and bolts real world knowledge, like balancing a checkbook, managing your credit, civic engagement. So they just kind of wonder if people leaving the ASD aren't going to be set up for some kind of disappointment because they don't have some of those real-world skills. I don't know, Mike, how you might want to approach that, or even, Dean, if you want to weigh in. It's not necessarily about the Anchorage School District. What do you think?
Well, we had actually some data recently, because we do like data, like I said before.
I'm so glad you're good at it.
We do a post-outcome postgraduate study, and we study kids 1 year out of school, 3 years out of school, and then 5 and 7 when they leave us. So we've done this. We have data now over the last 4 years. So graduates who have left us 7 years ago, we're asking them questions. And it's done by a third party, by a gentleman named Dr. Tarsi at Educational Research.
To grade your experience.
Correct.
Tell us what you think about
how
it.
Was it?
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, we find out who went to college, who didn't. Was it a technical school? What industry are they in now? So we want to gather information about our students. One of the questions is, were you prepared? And 82% over these years have said they're prepared. Now, the longer they're out, the lower the number. So I don't know if we're getting better or they just didn't realize. You know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they said specifically related to that was, where were they not prepared was financial literacy. And a couple years ago, we did change our policy to incorporate a civics class that included a financial literacy piece. And we're going to see how that works. But that our own graduates told us exactly what that person
interesting,
said.
Interesting.
And so we did change policy. It's a half credit that's necessary, but I don't really, you asked about a concern, you know, to Dr. Atwater about graduation rates. And my concern isn't necessarily about this number that's on this paper that we're talking about. My concern is, are these kids that are leaving us going to, is there a glass ceiling on them, or are they going to be able to join the military and be able to take that career, go into a career technical field? Are they going to be able to earn a livable wage? Are they going to have healthy, happy families?
Right.
Are they going to be college ready? And our success isn't based on this number. Our success is based on what can they do when they leave us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the goal for us to find out. So we have this number in a math score. So we have this number in a reading score or graduation rate. But what can kids really do when they leave us? And interestingly enough, that person
found
let us know the same thing that our graduates did. And we had to change policy again to address it. And but it doesn't change on a dime. It took us to get the course ready, to change the policy. You know,
And then you have to see, does it work? I mean, if you're teaching it, are they learning it?
Mm-hmm.
And are they taking it out into the world with them?
And if you're taking out college loans, boy, it
is
my
gosh.
Mountain of...
Oh, that's
so
that's
financial
scary.
Literacy actually is something...
Really important.
I wouldn't say that kids write checks anymore, though. We use debit cards.
Yeah, and... that's right. I'm going to throw out our numbers, and then I'm going to go to you, Mike, and just let you respond. But if you're in Anchorage, it's 550-843. If you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Mike, any response to this email?
And absolutely. In the Anchorage School District, 22.5 credits are required to graduate. But it's much more than credits, and it's much more than having that diploma in your hand. We want to prepare kids for life, and that means a lot of things. Career and technical education, our community in Anchorage has really embraced this new push to give kids some skills, whether it's financial literacy skills or whether it's learning to do something with their hands. So that push is back. That initiative is back.
Because it was a bit like everybody goes to college. I mean, is this a response back to that? Well, maybe that isn't the path to a happy life for everybody.
Well, yeah, and also for those students that go on to college, that's wonderful. But those very same students need those very same skills in communications, in dealing with
the public.
It's across
the board. Yeah.
Absolutely, with this financial literacy thing. It doesn't matter what degree you have. If you don't know how to manage your money, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And that education has to start somewhere, and we think it needs to start in the earlier grades
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking I might bring this up, but there's so much attention on these graduation rates, and I mentioned to Dina and Mike that I'd read a New York University educator who was confused about, you know, she said, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on these rates, but sometimes what you find out when there is pressure to raise the rates, the standards to get there decline so that they can meet the rates. And I guess I'm just inviting you to sort of respond to that. Do you feel the pressure to get those graduation rates up, and how do you make sure that the standards aren't getting corrupted so that you can get the numbers? I mean, I don't mean that as an indictment question at all, but she's kind of suggesting that, of course, we have to respond. We get the numbers up.
Mm-hmm. Well, the graduation rates up through this year did include the high school graduation qualifying exam. And if you know anything about that and really other states, our cut scores, if you will, were different than, like this person said, on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You can liken that. You know, if you took the same assessment in different places, the cut scores are different. It just was.
And a cut score is where?
To where a person would pass or not. So
okay.
Ours were lower.
Okay.
That is a given. We know that Alaska had a little bit lower.
And why were they lower?
We
needed them.
Lower. Yeah. Now, that test is gone, and we're using real tests. This past legislature did eliminate the high school qualifying and are using real live tests, like the work keys that is used in industry, ACT and SAT. And those are tests that are used nationwide that are scored by a third party, that our state doesn't have anything to really do those independently. And exactly what Anchorage is trying to do. Our state is a resource state, and you can be highly successful in an industry without a four-year degree. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean, though, that you will never learn. All these folks that are in these skilled trades, they still take tests. They still take assessments.
Oh,
when
sure.
you want
they
to
earn certification.
Correct. They have to. So it's really preparing kids for that next level of what they need. And if that next level is going to college and going that professional track, that's a choice. But there's also happy families and wealth to be made at the trades, especially in a resource state. So what we're trying to do within our districts is be realistic about that, and what are the jobs in Alaska, and
mm-hmm.
what are the dreams of kids, and
mm-hmm.
we're putting those together to access those. But
so you've got like an engineering thing going on in your district?
We do. Well, we have the Career and Technical High School, which has an engineering strand. Anchorage as well has one, and kids actually, they learn both sides. They learn the trade side of engineering as well as the professional side,
mm-hmm.
and we bring industry in to set the standards. We try to communicate as much as we can with our industry folks to tell us what they need. When I talk about, and we mentioned the skills, I mean, you can go get a two-year degree in process technology and get a job on the slope, probably starting at $50,000-$60,000. You can have a four-year degree, and more loans do. And I hate to say this, but have a teachers aren't making $60,000 their first year. So, but it's really about what does a child want to do with his or her life. Sometimes making the most money isn't the dream
the
of
goal.
Everybody, but you know, for some students it is.
And
we try to match it up with the kinds of programs that kids are going to need for that next level, next step. And that's really what we're interested in,
mm-hmm.
Because we know that our communities are going to be healthy when people are working and contributing and being able to rear their own children here.
You know, one of the things that you definitely hear in the state is as oil dollars go down, you know, we're going to have to find new ways of funding everything. And there's this, I hear it and read about it, a drive for sort of the entrepreneurial spirit, the startup, why can't we have a knowledge industry here? Why can't, you know, with the internet and all that? And I wonder about, you know, are kids coming out of high school with coding skills? Is that even anything that's on the horizon here? No. No.
I mean, what do you...
By that, I mean, you can go online to the Code Academy and learn how to do HTML and, you know...
Oh, absolutely. They're writing apps. Half the apps that we use in our school district were written by our own students, and we pay them to do them.
Is that right?
So, yes. Our Matsu app, you can download it for free, was written by one of our seniors. So they are doing all types of, of that. And I was going medical coding. We actually have a medical coding class.
Well, I
so
mean,
they're
I,
earning
I,
money there,
yeah,
too.
I did hear that there was, like, the medical field, of course, that's a huge growth industry in the United States everywhere. And in our own state, it is. And so I heard, I think, from Diane Hirschberg that there were there was a health track in our high schools. And I was sort of curious, what does that mean? What's a health track?
Well, Bartlett, for one, has a health academy, and what we've done is we've refurbished some of our older science and biology classrooms, and they are now classrooms where we hold the health academy, and our students, once they become certified, are able to go right into business industry and get some entry-level jobs, even while they're high school students. At Service High School have a biotech program there where students are not only learning some very rigorous things as it has to do with health occupations, but are becoming certified, and it just leads right into jobs.
Mm-hmm. It's a certified nursing assistants, mm-hmm. and so a lot of our kids do go into college, and especially like at UAA, they have to wait a couple years to get into the nursing school because it has a wait list.
Yeah.
But they go out and they get $15 to $25 jobs because they have a certified nursing assistant.
Well, they're trying to wait to
get
in.
We have FlexCore Welding. We have Cisco. So we have kids leaving and being able to get network jobs right away at $20, $25 an hour.
Right.
So those are the types of things that we're talking about that we are offering. And the state has a multiplier for career technical education that we're mm-hmm. able to infuse into our schools. And this might not be the end-all job for kids, but it's the foot in the door to continue their career path.
Mm-hmm. And it's not flipping burgers.
Right. And interesting, when we did our survey, 48% of our students work 20 hours or more in college when we did that postgraduate
yes.
study.
Uh-huh.
So we know that our kids are having to earn a living and assist in paying for college, assisting their parents and paying for college
right.
As well. So
you're thinking
you know,
about that.
These
yeah.
are leaving with these skills is good, but I mean, just a skill of showing up on time and you know, doing a checkbook like they said and things like that are essential.
Yeah. What about critical thinking? And let me throw out our numbers out one more time for our audience. If you're in Anchorage, you can ask Dina of the Mat-Su School District or Mike of the Anchorage School District questions about graduation rates or dropout rates. We're at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I was going to ask about critical thinking. I was just observing over at UAA that there were sort of liberal arts professors, poli-sci area, you know, English, those areas where people are really learning critical thinking and actually getting them to learn coding so that when they go out into the world, they actually have a skill set, even though they have this broad education about how to think about things, how to, you know, I think critically, they don't have that skill set that you just plug them right into a job, that they were basically saying the Anchorage market has a tremendous need for these skills, and whatever your interest is, that interest area needs those skills too. So, you know, whether you want to end up working as a legislative aide, whoever you're working for probably needs you to know those coding skills. So we're trying to pair these liberal arts majors up with kind of this new skill set. So I guess I just, you know, that's why I asked that question about whether it's happening in high school, but I guess it's happening naturally. It's happening.
Well, it's an argument
organically.
In education all over. Is it skill based or is it liberal arts? You know, is it the art or the science of education?
Yeah.
And they ebb and flow and according to needs. I mean,
and probably our state has an impact because we have so many jobs. I mean, I've certainly read studies why they are not pursuing higher education because they can stop here or get a 1-year degree or a 2-year certification and then they can go right to work. And they're very happy doing that, you know.
And critical thinking skills are an absolute must in today's economy because very few people go into a profession and stay for the rest of their lives. Also, one thing we've not talked about, we believe that when a student wakes up every morning, there has to be something at school that's drawing them, whether it's athletics, whether it's that career and technical education program, whether it's building that robot, whether it's the language arts class and the writing that the kid's excited about. When we start losing kids, because they don't have a real reason to go. And some students, when they don't have the support at home, they lose interest in school, whether they're struggling or brilliant, and they just find something else to do. So we pay attention to that an awful lot on, mm-hmm. on making school a good place to be and not a pain.
Yeah. I watched the UAA Yale debate over whether that money should be spent on athletics in public schools. And that argument that if we can get them in the door with athletics that keeps them in school, that's valuable to us, you know. And that was a big chief argument that they were making.
We tend to believe also that the being on a team and being a participant is some of the best education we give kids, not just attracting them, but actually being on a team and working on behalf of the team. Some of those skills we don't believe we can teach in a classroom, and we need activities and athletics to prepare kids for mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure we kind of covered I was going to say the dropout rate, but really what I think would be more useful is to take a look at our graduation rates. And again, I'm kind of nodding back to Diane Hirschberg, who gave me some sort of background here. Let's talk a little bit about our Alaska Native students, because their graduation rates are not where they're around 51%, I think, whereas we're seeing generally in the high 70s, mid 70s, high 70s. So in your districts, how do you think about that? What are your concerns about that? And more importantly, are there things that you have attempted to do that you see progress on?
In Mat-Su, we studied this with one of our parent groups and discussion. And if we look at the elementary data of reading and writing and mathematics, our Alaska Native students score as well and are performing as well as the aggregate or the whole group. And that drops off starting in middle school and high school. And we're interested in that, about what can we do to keep kids connected. In every demographic that we looked at in, Mr. Henry here mentioned athletics and music and clubs and things like that, or AP courses, we track is the ratio of Alaska Native students or any student in any demographic the same in those groups,
right?
Or are we only catering to some? And one of the things we found, the only group that was similar was sports. So our Alaska Native students were in sports at the same rate as everyone else, but they were not in advanced courses. They were not in higher level math courses as everyone else. And what we looked at is really working with NSEP, because that's a nationally recognized program by Harvard as
that's the Alaska Native
Science and Engineering Program.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And they have a middle school component. And basically, it's exactly what Mike Henry talked about engaging kids and turning them on. And mm-hmm. we start in sixth grade, and we worked with our state to secure additional funds to send our kids during the school year for 10 days on campus. So campus, starting in sixth grade every year, our Alaska Native kids are going to, they apply for the program, and things that kids that want to do it, they get to go basically learn on campus.
You're talking UAA?
At UAA.
At their ANSEP program.
Yes,
uh-huh.
And they build a computer in sixth grade, and they're skin in the game to keep that computer, and it's a nice computer, Blu-ray, everything.
Uh-huh.
And they get to keep the computer if they score an A or a B in algebra by eighth grade, because we found that our Alaska Native students were not taking it. And it wasn't a matter of not being able to do the course. They weren't attracted to it. So somehow within our system, we weren't encouraging kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working with them. And the most recent education bill did provide for all school districts to have additional funds. So I believe NSEP is going to reach out to every district.
Wow, that's big.
But we are, to us, it's that engagement early on. Mr. Atwater mentioned it's not what happens your senior year, whether you graduate. It really happens all throughout you. Are you prepared for schooling? Do you learn how to read?
Right.
Can you use reading to learn every other course?
Right.
Are you still engaged? And one of the other things, career and technical high school, this is how we use data too. We looked, and for some reason, career tech has this great graduation rate. It's a well-loved school. It has a waiting list. We only had 2% Alaska Natives, and we have 14% Alaska Natives in our district.
So it's
going to career tech. And we were like, why aren't these kids choosing that? So we went to the kids who were in career tech, and we said, why did you choose this, and why don't other Alaska Native kids choose this? And they told us, well, you don't talk to us the right way. You don't introduce it. And what we were doing in middle school was taking accounts or going to a gym, talking to all the kids about all these
opportunities
when they go to high school, because we have lots. And they said that's not how we learn something. We want to hear from somebody else. And so we started taking these kids, going into small groups. And interestingly enough, in 1 year, there's 18% Alaska Natives at Corinne Technical High School.
So peer introduction.
Absolutely.
So a peer introduces mm-hmm. them to it and says, I did it. I like it. Mm-hmm.
And they're being mm-hmm. successful. And so it's not one silver bullet that's going to cure everything, but we're looking at programs. We look at winners and like to invest in winners and listen to kids about what's turning them on to education and
so
why they do what they do.
That's really interesting. What a revelation that was. Mm-hmm. You know,
it was. And
ask them.
In 1 year, we mm-hmm. turned it around, and they're doing well there. So the kids did belong there. They did earn a right. You know, there's some scores that they have to get in a career tech. It mm-hmm. has a cut score. And the interesting thing, the kids were able to do the cut scores, but they just weren't choosing it. And so
that's
it was
really interesting
how we introduced them
very
to the program.
Interesting. Mike, let's go over to you. We've got a couple minutes left. We've got about 3 minutes left, I think. What about Alaska Native students in the Anchorage School District? What's the picture there?
Let me start off by saying we're not pleased with our graduation rates, but the small celebration in the past 4 years, we've experienced 11% increase in graduation rates. And I have to tell you, I'd like to take credit for it, but we have very strong partnerships with Cook Inlet Tribal Council, with ANCEPT. We have one of the largest Native charter schools in the country, and we are positive that those folks and those partnerships and our Alaska Native Charter School is helping us.
Now, this is the one over in Muldoon. Is that the Alaska Native Charter School, Alaska Native Cultural Charter School, I think? I've met the Yupik Spelling Bee winner from there, and it was really fun. And the reason I bring that up is just Diane Hirschberg had said to me that the performance rates for Alaska Natives are even below the economically disadvantaged students, so that something else is going on there. And she didn't have the answer. She's like, what could it be? And so it just made me, your example, Dina, of asking these Alaska Native students why, you know, well, it's the way you're not talking to us about it. We, you know, and I just the ideas where the solutions might come from are really they can be on the ground as they were in Dina's, or you know, it's not really. I mean, it's like you really have to be open to where these solutions might come from. So what's the enrollment at that school? Do you know at the Alaska Native Charter School?
You know, I'm not sure.
Not really sure. Yeah, but you it's a high point. You're really.
No question about it.
Yeah.
And you can bet the minute I get back to my office, I'm going to check and see what the percentage of Alaska Native students are at King Career Center. We're not afraid to borrow ideas from our neighboring school districts, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I liked when we sat down here, we were saying we're not three school districts that are fighting with each other. We actually have much more in common. We've got another email that I think I'll share with the audience here. Dear Hometown, I'm a lifelong Anchorage resident and a graduate of the ASD schools. I graduated from West High in 1990 and went on to college at UC Santa Barbara. I found that when I went there, I was well prepared compared to my classmates. In some cases, I was ahead of them, particularly in terms of the variety of literature I had been exposed to in junior high and high school, and in terms of geography and history. Shortly after I started there, the Gulf War broke out, and I was one of the only people I met who knew where Kuwait or Iraq were. I now am an employee of ASD, and while school and students have changed a lot since I was a student, I still feel that students are given quality education and great opportunities. That's a kind of a nice note to end
Yay.
On. There's always all kinds of criticism and concern. Are we doing it right? Are we meeting the test? You know. Thank you. I really want to thank you guys for coming in today and tackling this kind of weighty statistical thing on graduation rates and dropout rates. I thank you very much for your insights. And we hope to offer some other programs here on education on Hometown Alaska as the summer progresses. So I want to thank Dina Paramo, superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District, Steve Atwater, who was on the phone with us for a while from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and Mike Henry here in the studio with me, executive director of secondary education at Anchorage School District. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back on Hometown Alaska talking about how and why Anchorage is such a diverse community. Please connect with us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Our website is alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Monica Goki is our audio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Home Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.